You're listening to Working, the show about what people do all day. I'm your host, Jordan Weissman, and I am back with my third and final holiday bonus edition for 2018. For this episode, I thought it would be fun to talk with someone who's responsible for one of my favorite parts about Christmas in New York City, and that is the Christmas windows that pop up all around Midtown in the big department stores. If you've been to the city during the holidays, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Bergdorf Goodman's, at Macy's, at Saks, at Bloomingdale's, at Tiffany's. They all do these big, elaborate Christmas scenes in their windows. Some of them are kind of cute and traditional. Some of them are high fashion and theatrical with all sorts of mirrors and, you know, cool clothes and bright colors, machinery. Either way, you're going to hear from Quinn O'Sullivan. He is a production director at Spaeth Designs in Woodside, Queens, and he's been in the business of putting together these windows for almost two decades now. And he told me all about how the magic happens. So enjoy. What's your name and what do you do?
My name is Quinn O'Sullivan and I am a window display artist.
And who do you work for? Who are you a window display artist for?
I work for a private company that's been around for about 60 years.
Oh, wow.
And I...
What's it called?
The name of the company is Spaeth Design.
Yeah. And so they've been doing this for more than half a century.
The current owner's mother and father started the company in 1960-something.
And how long have you been doing this for?
I started there the year 2000.
So you do window displays, like just all kinds of retail, or do you mostly do holiday displays?
Yeah. So about 80% of what we do is holiday. Believe it or not, we start working on holiday displays in sometimes April and May, depending on the customer's needs.
Okay. So you're the guy who does the Christmas displays all over New York. What are some of the stores that you work for?
I was just like on the way over here trying to do a rough calculation, and I would guesstimate I've done about maybe 400 Christmas windows in the past, like, 19 years, 18 years.
400 Christmas windows.
Yeah.
And can you just name some of the stores you've done them for?
All the big stores in New York, Macy's, Saks Fifth Avenue, Lord & Taylor, Bergdorf Goodman, Bloomingdale's,
wow.
Tiffany.
This is very cool to me because I love Christmas in New York. I'm a New York native. My mom and I, as like a Christmas tradition, whenever she's back in the city, we always go down Madison and Fifth and just look at the displays, and especially Bergdorf's. She just loves going and looking at the Bergdorf windows. And so it's very exciting for me to actually talk to someone who is responsible for this part of my growing up in the city. So for all the big stores, you've done over 400 of these. How did you start in this industry? How did you come into it?
I came into it from the theater, growing up in a really interesting environment where building and making things and creating and singing and dancing was, normal and something you did from the age, eight on through.
Yeah.
And just being around all that. And
wait, so you grew up like in the theater?
I grew up, yeah.
Were you a performer? Or
I was as a kid. I was performing in a local theater group where I grew up outside of Chicago.
Okay, cool.
And had some great memories, doing shows.
Yeah.
Putting together the scenery.
Yeah.
Also building things.
Yeah.
As a kid, being around adults, watching them, helping them.
Yeah.
But, I think that kind of sunk in.
And so you got into the tech side and the scenery side from that.
I did, yeah. And I also just was a person who liked to make and build things.
Mm-hmm.
And, tools. I was always interested in machines and tools and, hoarding stuff that I could put in my toolbox,
yeah.
As a kid.
And so then you went into theater professionally at some point.
In college, I, worked in theater. I worked in the opera department.
Okay.
At Indiana University, which has a really fantastic opera program. And so they have these shops where they put together all these productions. And I was looking for a job. And, hey, look at this posting here. I'll just go check this out. Wow, what a great place. I love this. This is fantastic. So I just was around that, not studying that. It's studying art, but learned a lot of really great stuff around this place, like living and, breathing the scene shop and putting together shows, really big shows, and a huge stage.
So you're putting together like the background for like, you know, for like the marriage Figaro or whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah. And some really crazy designs and, you know, massive scenery, you know, some of the backdrops we would paint, you know, 50 foot tall, you know, by 80 foot wide backdrops and with mops and, you know, you're out there laying out the artwork out there on this giant drop. And
that sounds like the exact opposite of a Christmas window, though.
Well, that's...
I cannot imagine... That, maybe there is an 80-foot, you know, wide Christmas window somewhere.
There are none, no.
Okay, so how did you then end up in this corner of, like, the scene building world?
So coming to New York, you know, for me, New York was Mecca and a place I wanted to live. And after college, I decamped to New York and started looking around and, what the hell am I going to do here? Scraping together ideas, a few contacts, and scouring the Village Voice back then was where you went to look for a job. And there was this job. Okay, what's this place? Check it out. Spaeth Design. I looked it up, and this looks like a pretty good place. Not hiring. Okay, well, keep trying. So I kept calling back, and one day they called me. It was actually right around this time. It was like December 16th or something like that. You'd think all the Christmas windows would be done, but they called me up. They said, we need some help doing some work here. So I went and that was it. I was in. And
what was it about that kind of line of work that like really spoke to you? Like that it was just like your need work, or it was there was something, you know, about the idea of doing this kind
of project? I needed to be doing creative work. That was for me crucial. You know, I could always make money renovating people's bathrooms or, you know, things like that. I had some skills, but for me, the passion was designing and, you know, colors and, you know, interesting projects. I wanted to make things that were exciting and new.
Were you a big Christmas guy? Like, were you someone who liked Christmas?
No, I grew up in a Catholic, you know, going to church and all that stuff back home, and German and Irish and Scandinavian background. So, you know, Christmas was a big deal for us. I had some great Christmas memories, and, you know, we decorated and always went and got a tree every year. And
So you were a Christmas guy.
Definitely.
You're a holiday
guy. It's true. And even now to this day, when I hire everyone that works at Spaeth Design. So, you know, you come and apply for a job there.
Yeah.
You got to size somebody up when they come in and think, is this guy going to bring a little spirit with them? You have some people that come through the door that are technically, you know, incredible. They can just make anything out of anything, but they're coming at it from a horror movie background or something like that, you know, and they can just create, you know, their technical skills are just way up there.
Well, they do a nightmare before Christmas.
They just, you know, you just have to kind of pass those people over because they just... You have to have a certain,
because Christmas. You can't have Kris Kringle killing Mrs. Mrs. Claus. Like,
you have to have, even if it's a ironic love of Christmas, you have to have some appreciation of it.
You said you're dealing with these windows from April on through the holiday. So, I mean, you're surrounded by it constantly.
No, you get sick of it otherwise.
You are the elves.
We are the elves, believe it or not.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
So you joined this company, and I guess were you technically a designer or a carpenter? What was...
No,
what was
I came on as a carpenter.
Okay.
And, you know, really wasn't an expert carpenter. I was new to it, but I had a good background in different things. I was a guy in my 20s who went and lived in, you know, 6 different cities and did 15 different jobs.
Yeah.
And went back to college at age 27 and got a degree.
Oh, cool.
And so, you know, I kind of came into it with a wide range of experience, which for this work was great because it's so varied. You know, we do a lot of mechanical work. We do scenic painting work. We're sculpting. We're wiring things, electric AV, you know, audio. We're putting all these things together into the work. So having that background helped.
I mean, how many people work on a single window?
Depends on the project, but you could have up to 15 people working on a window or more. We have about 35 year-round employees at Spaeth Design, and then another 15 to 20 freelancers when we get really busy.
For the holiday season, when it's heading to crunch time.
Yeah, from, say, September until Halloween is kind of when we're wrapping up.
And a project that requires 15 people, I mean, how big a window are we talking there?
So the bigger windows are about 15 feet wide and about 7 feet deep, maybe 9 feet tall. And that's on the larger side. Macy's has windows that big. Lord & Taylor, you remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were on 38th Street over there. Yeah.
God rest.
Oh, yeah.
R.I.P.
The windows at a lot of the stores in Fifth Avenue are about 10 by 10 feet.
Yeah. I mean, it's a room. In New York, that is actually, that's a bedroom.
Exactly.
Essentially.
It's like a bedroom. It's not as deep.
Yeah.
It's usually about 6 feet deep.
Well, I mean, and that might be a bedroom here in this city. I mean, but so, I mean, it's a large space that you guys are decorating and designing and conceiving.
Yeah.
And you guys have a workshop also. Yeah, I'm describing you as elves, but like you guys actually, it is a big workshop in Queens, right?
Yeah, we call it a studio. You know, it's, it's about 20,000 square feet.
Okay,
wow. And, you know, you could play a couple of basketball games in there side by side. And
what does it look like in there? What is like, what's the setup?
Well, it's a great setup. We have tons of machines and any kind of woodworking, metalworking machines that you could imagine, because a lot of it is just, you know, cutting up wood, making panels, making decks and more mundane stuff. But then you also have to do all of the detailed stuff and decorative things that happen in a window display, and that requires, in this day and age, CNC routers and 3D printers and laser cutters and all that kind of stuff that people use now to make things. So we're well outfitted. We have a paint studio where we do murals.
Yeah.
You know, we can stretch pieces of canvas on the wall, and we have scaffolds that we can move around to get up and down and paint scenes. We have a mold making area that's really interesting. It's got a library of molds that go back to like 1987 for all the different sculpts that have happened throughout the year. So, you know, as you do these projects, you create a head of an elf or something like that.
Yeah.
And you'll have somebody sculpt that out of plasticine or clay or something, and then you'll make a plaster mold out of it, and then you can make duplicates of it, and we have a whole library of these things in the back, and it's just up to the ceiling with these things. And then on one wall you've got this really weird looking array of body parts, you know, screwed to the wall with a little number next to it.
This
is mold number, you know, X92 and mold number X93, so you can go and, as you're making these, you know, characters up, you can grab these parts and compose them into a
even prefabbed, and you know, it's like, okay, I can use this arm and this body.
So you don't have to start from scratch every time.
Are you mostly making the figures in these things from scratch, or do you sometimes use mannequins?
You know, it's really changing. A lot of what we used to do was all custom. We would you know, really just sit around with a pad of paper and start dreaming up ideas about what are we going to do and how are we going to present it. We might start with a germ of an idea, like, oh, let's do, you know, Christmas through the ages or something like that. We'll do a Christmas in, you know, old England, or Christmas in, you know, Christmas around the world, for example. We'll do a scene in Paris. We'll do a scene in, you know, you name the city. But then we would sit around and work on scenarios and, you know, oh, we can have a guy in a, you know, going up to a mailbox with a letter to Santa, or we could, you know, have a boat unloading cargo or something. So you dream up these scenarios and then create the vignettes out of these characters. So we'll have an old guy over here, and then we'll have a kid on a bicycle, and then you always need a horse and carriage, you know, for many years, it was like a must-have item. If you didn't have that, just forget it.
It had to feel a little bit like a Christmas carol or something.
Yeah, it was a very traditional kind of image there.
When would you start the brainstorming process? Was it you would come up with ideas and then pitch them to clients? Or was it clients would come to you and say, we'd like you to come work on our windows this year and start thinking up stuff, or we have something? Or...
It's always a mix.
Yeah.
It's always a mix. So sometimes we do design it from scratch.
Yeah.
We'll storyboard it. We'll make models. We'll... you know, develop it, color renderings, the whole thing. And that's, throughout our company, different stages and different people working on it. Design team, prop makers would make a little model of it.
And you'll do that before you've had an order or after you've had it, after you've kind of...
Sometimes you do that on spec. So,
oh, really?
Hey, we're thinking about this project. You guys have any ideas? You know, we really want that job. Let's put something together and see if we can get them interested.
Oh, interesting. So you will do it like a thing and come in and present that as
I'm not recommending that. That's, please don't come to us with your project. Give us a down payment, please.
So for the most part, though, it's once you've agreed you're going to work with a company,
usually,
you'll start. That's when the brainstorming will start?
Yeah, in earnest, if you want to really go forward with a concrete plan.
But how often do the stores themselves have a good idea of what they want to do beforehand? And how often is it that you guys are the ones who are kind of coming up with it yourselves entirely?
It used to be more 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's probably more like 80-20.
Interesting. Yeah, so they tell you a lot more now.
Yeah, a lot of the concepts are coming from marketing teams. It used to be that the window display manager in a store would have more leeway. Okay, he's over here, he's going to make up his mind on what to do, and as long as it looks good, we're okay with it. But now it's, it's tied into a national marketing campaign or all sorts of other factors and other people want to be involved. So a lot of times it comes down from on high. And
so corporate's gotten a lot more involved with this. Also, I imagine some of the stores, they're no longer independent. And so, I guess Bergdorf's is owned by Neiman Marcus, for instance. And so, there's probably some more corporate involvement.
We really only have a few customers because a lot of the stores are owned by the same parent companies.
So there's been corporatization and consolidation, and that changes the way you guys have to work.
It really does, yeah.
Because you kind of gestured to that before. You said that a lot less of it is the total custom job where you're making the parts from scratch. That was more in the past. Now there's a little bit more, when they're saying we want to do this kind of a thing, it's a little bit less made to order.
Well, I think what I was getting at with that is that before we would be portraying scenes, very kind of theatrical almost scenes where you're almost like stage directing these things where you've got these little, there's a child being lifted up by their father up putting the star on the tree and things like that. And now it's more about bigger motion and, sometimes you won't even have a character in the window. It'll just be, animals or it'll be, I don't know. It's just less of the
kind of moving
theatrical
pieces,
stuff. We used to just do a lot of small characters moving around in the windows and just a lot of stores have moved away from that. They wanted we did a giant cuckoo clock.
Yeah.
1 year, so it was less about that storytelling than just this giant spectacle.
It sounds like you like the storytelling, that's kind of what that person, or do you like both?
No, I mean, I think I want to be entertained. I think everybody wants to be entertained when they're out there. They want to see something that gives them a little kick and gives them a little emotional kick. I like the emotional kick that you kind of get a little feeling out of it. You're not just...
You're not
looking
just being
at
wild,
it, okay, that's nice. It's flashing lights and shining.
Yeah.
Ooh, you want to go, oh, wow, that's really sweet scene they've got there. Look at that. Wow.
Yeah, when I asked before if you're like a Christmas guy, and you are, I can tell. You like the traditional, you like the, well, I guess Dickens is, but the Christmas Carol kind of thing.
I enjoy it. But the rule in my house is, so you know, I do not do any decorating. It's just no.
Well, that's the office. You can't bring the office home.
I don't do it.
Yeah,
so
I don't blame you.
My wife asked me to take these lights and untangle them. I'm like, nah, listen, no, I'm not doing that.
Also, another key question I think I need to ask. I asked how many people are on the team. Who is on the team? Who are the people? They're like up to 15 folks who will be working.
Yeah, right.
This.
So you've got, we're department, sort of organized by department. So we've got design, we've got carpentry, We've got what we call animation, which is all the mechanical movements. We've got a scenic department, which involves sculpting and painting, texturing, things like that. We've also got the character department that does molds and all the sculpting of the characters. And then, you know, all the costuming. Imagine all the things that you, all the characters that you create all have to have, you know, a shirt, a pair of pants, two shoes, a pair of glasses, a hat. It's a huge job to make all these things that are doll size.
And are the people on your team mostly coming from a movie theater background? Or
yeah, probably about 85% of us are theater people that just wandered into this field, and for better or worse, here we are.
So you're a bunch of theater folks who are sitting around just brainstorming what you're going to do. So where does it go from there? Once you've talked out ideas, what happens next?
This is a fun part of the project is, you know, really creating samples and studies and proofs of concept and, hey, wouldn't it be great if we, you know, put this, you know, mix some glitter in with this resin and we, you know, poured it all over this giant thing and let's see what that would look like. So we'll go back and start playing with materials and experimenting, you know, because we have to make the windows, but we also have to get our customers excited about the ideas that we have and to sell them. So a lot of it is, you know, make a small section of the piece that you're going to make. So that part of it's really fun to dream up and invent ideas and problem solve your way through the process to get this thing done.
Is that something you are very hands-on in at that point? It's sort of the testing and...
Well, for me personally, I'm kind of involved in everything. I'm the traffic guy, really. I'm keeping people moving where they need to go and interacting with the customers and making sure that they're getting what they need. But I am also a hands-on guy. I didn't get into this to be sitting at a desk. So for me, I'm constantly getting up and heading over to the bandsaw to cut something out and work out an idea and see what it might look like.
So you're doing some of that too.
You're
not just managing. You're getting
not at all. No, I'm like a player coach, you know. So I'm really in the game doing work.
So everyone, once you've come up with the idea for the scene, you're testing out different things, and then how does that start to come together into an actual like where does it go from there?
Well, you know, a lot of times we're making models. In this day and age, it's computers. Mm-hmm. It's all done in 3D programs or possibly 2D with a kind of layered approach where we work up models in illustration board, whiteboard, get out the laser cutter and, you know, let's mock this up real quick. And you can do those models fairly efficiently, you know, operating a laser cutter is like operating a printer. So it's, you know, anybody can really do it. And you can quickly assess problems with an idea and, you know, get a sense of how something's going to read by making a scale model of it. And, you know, that also gets the customer excited about it. A lot of times the people we deal with have to take this idea to somebody back at the office and, you know, sell them on the idea, somebody that we don't even deal with or talk to.
Yeah.
So they need something tangible that they can go back and say, hey guys, look at this. This is great. You know, we really figured this out. And isn't this a wonderful, you know, way of presenting this?
I assume you prefer doing the physical model over doing something on
computer. For us, more often than not, a physical model is...
What kind of computer drafting software do you guys use?
We use Vectorworks mostly to generate the drafting. We also use, you know, the typical 3D stuff, Studio Max and things like that. Not so much SketchUp, but now and then people, really whatever a person's comfortable with, we have 15 different pieces of software that we could open up and use to get a job done.
So you have the whole digital design side that you can do, but you also prefer, if you can, doing the physical mock-up then to give someone and to take to their boss or whatnot.
Yeah, the other thing about it is that when you're creating the documents to make a model, you know, you're drawing this thing out, a vector drawing of it, and that drawing can be used later on to feed to the CNC machine. So now you've got something that, number one, serves as a presentation, but then you're also taking that and scaling it up and using it to create sometimes very intricate pieces that you could do with the machine that we would have never been able to do 20 years ago.
So digitization actually has given you guys a little bit more you can do.
Well, it has made a lot more possible for the projects.
Yeah. You mentioned that sometimes you'll notice problems in the design as you build out the model. What kind of problems crop up when you're designing a Christmas window?
Well, sight lines is important to us. Like, you know, a lot of times we're trying to maximize the space and try to cram things in there that, you know, really there's not enough space to do. So you're squeezing everything from front to back to fit into this scene. So sometimes you need to block the view of something so that it'll kill the illusion if you don't have the pieces lining, stacking up in the right way, for example. So, and a lot of times a 2D drawing doesn't tell you that. You make the model and you can crane your head around left and right and say, okay, when I'm looking at it from this side, this is what I see here. But okay, oh, wow, over here, I'm seeing the back of that guy's leg and that, you know, he's supposed to look like he's in a hot air balloon and, you know, in this basket.
It's a good way to preserve the illusion or make sure you're getting the illusion right. Because some of it, because you're not actually building a full hot air balloon.
Sometimes you're just making like just the part that you see is all that we care about, really.
Yeah. And so you have to know exactly what it is the person can see. And you have to preview that.
Another common problem is making things too high.
Interesting.
So kids don't see it because a lot of, you know, we want to make it so that everyone that sees it can enjoy it. But a lot of times you misjudge it. A drawing doesn't always tell you what you need to know. Sometimes, you know, we do a lot of cardboard mock-ups too. So we'll, you know, take a pile of cardboard and just cut things out full scale and just hold them up. And
how big are they usually? I mean, are you doing full size?
Usually, when we'll do cardboard mock-ups at a full scale.
Okay, so and that's what gives
you
the
very inexpensive
sense
to do and can save a lot of trouble down the road.
You'll do like the full 9x10 room in cardboard.
Yeah, sometimes.
And that's what lets you see if like the little kid is going to be able to crane their neck right way or something like that.
Yes.
Cool.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now, getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average, 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So once you're doing that and the client is starting to see it, do you get like creative input from the client ever at that point?
Constant. You know, depending on the customer, some people are remote. Some people aren't even in New York. So we're dealing with people in other cities that we're, you know, showing photographs to them or things like that. But no, everybody's that we work with is heavily involved. And, you know, they're creative people too. They're in this because they love to make something new and make something that's going to get attention. And
what is a typical feedback? Is there a typical feedback, like a common complaint or a common request from clients?
You know, one thing we are often asked to do is fill the space. So, you know, you really want to make it look, you've been to Bergdorf's and you know that those windows like look, this looks like an entire antique shop in one window sometimes. So
every inch will be covered in mirrors or something along those lines.
You know, everybody loves that look and it's fun to look at that. We all love that experience of looking at this crowded scene. I think it's partially because, you know, you wonder how it all got in there and how I wonder anyway. Maybe people that don't work in this field don't wonder that. But I always wonder, did they get that stuff in there?
Yeah.
Like, how did they get that chair hanging off that ceiling?
So that's the question you always wonder. Like, how did they get that volume of stuff?
But then you're also just fascinated by what it is, of course. You're like, wow, look at this thing. Like, there's another one over there. Wow, there's this, you know, icicle coming down. And look at that little scene in the corner and all these hidden things that take, you know, time to discover. You're standing there and, you know, a lot of window displays, you can look at it and in 5 seconds, you kind of, okay, I get it, I'm walking. But some of them, they draw you in. And what is it about that? What do you do when you stand there? Where you are you?
Yeah, I'm one of those people who kind of like goes and like I kind of scan the whole thing a little bit by bit. I treat them like a museum exhibit, like the really good ones. Like, because I mean,
so
they are.
Fun.
I mean, you're seeing all this craft work, but it sounds like there is this kind of drive to there's like this maximalist drive. Then as you're saying that people kind of want to get more stuff and fill it.
That is true. Yeah, you want it to be full and look full.
And so that's a request that you're getting is like get more, do more.
How can we fill it up? How can we make this look very detailed and rich and busy?
Yeah, busy.
Busy sounds bad. It's like busy work.
Yeah, no, busy can be good though. Vibrant.
Yeah, vibrant.
So that's the kind of thing that you'll be getting. I imagine that costs more too, though.
True.
Are they asking you to do more with less, or are they just saying we'll pay for it?
Well, you know, we have to work within the confines of their budgets.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's our job. I consider it my job to use good judgment to get them the best thing that I can get them for the budget that they have. You know, that's something that I try to train other people that I'm helping to learn this job. You know, you're not just there to spend as little as you can and keep as much profit as you can. You're there to help the person that you're working with to get the best possible thing with the amount of money that they have. You know, everybody has a limit. That doesn't mean that it has to be a less effort. You know, it just means that you have to be more creative. It means you have to be more resourceful. There are always ways.
So how long does this design process take for a window typically? I mean, you said some of these can start in April, so I imagine a while.
The design process varies. The worst case scenario is someone coming to you a month before the window's supposed to open and say, oh, you know, we want to do something with you guys. Can you fit us in? And sure, we do. We're glad to work with people. And a lot of times you have to understand that they're not the person that is making the decision. It's a marketing thing. It's coming down from another person. So you're not going to get upset about it. The process can be done in a month. You can do a whole set of Christmas windows in a month. We've done some really fast turnarounds where we get a call. Normally, all of our work is done by the second week of November. A lot of times, we'll get a call, you know, the day before Thanksgiving or, you know, the couple of days before Thanksgiving. We got an idea. We wanted to, wondering if you can do this. And actually, that's a great time for us because we're so warmed up from work, you know, all this work and making things that we're ready to keep going, but, you know, we're done. So that's a great time to get the crew so you can really create in very short amount of time something amazing.
Oh, interesting. Because everyone else has already sort of got their windows at that point. So the people who make the really late order.
Got a crew, available labor pool waiting to do something.
And that's basically that's gravy for you guys because you weren't expecting to get that order for the season. So in a way, that's actually good news coming in, that super late order.
Yeah, we enjoy that.
Yeah, the last minute order, that's rare that anyone actually wants that in any business. That's interesting. When you are hired for one of these jobs, is it typically you're doing one window for a store and when they have lots, or are you doing a series of them?
No. Usually we're doing a whole six window package or more. You know, sometimes we'll do 14, 15 windows or maybe 20 sometimes, depending on the store.
So you can be planning out like six of these 9x10 boxes and for the big stores or so a whole storefront.
Exactly.
And how many clients will you guys take in a year usually?
We will do anywhere from, you know, four to eight stores.
Okay. Yeah.
And maybe not every one of those is all six windows or eight windows or whatever they have, but we will have the bigger jobs we'll do, you know, sometimes six or so.
When do you go from the process of designing and planning out to actually installing these things?
Well, it's an interesting process. It's a lot of pushing the rock uphill. You know, it's a lot of work done without knowing where you're headed.
Okay.
It's a lot of work that's done guessing. You know, we don't know what color everything's going to be. We don't know the exact layout, but we got to start making things. So let's get the guys going. We're going to divide this up. We're going to make pieces of this project. We've seen a white model of it. We know the basic layout. Mm-hmm. A lot of times there are surprises along the way. Not only our customer might change their mind about something, or you might, after you see it in the flesh and, you know, made up in real life, it's not what you thought. You know, this is a creative process. And I tell people that get hired, you have to be ready to change the plan in the middle of this. You never know. And don't get disheartened by that. Get excited by that, because what it means is that we're going to make it better. We're going to take this thing that's just okay, and we're going to turn it up a few notches until it's incredible. Turn up the Christmas.
Just
ramp it up.
Ramp up the Christmas.
Right through the roof.
Get those reindeer revved. So you're designing it. You're doing all this prep work. You've sketched it out and you've drawn it. So you have an idea for color scheme and everything. But things change. You don't know exactly what it's going to look like until you get there.
Yeah. So it's really great that the last week before you go to install, you've got so many people working on these things. You never really have a chance to put it all together. You've got all the scenery, you've got wooden decks and panels and walls and doors and units, and they've all got to be treated and wallpapered and gold leafed and glittered and, you know, whatever the treatment is. You've got the characters in it that have to be sculpted, costumed, painted, you know, hair, makeup, the whole thing has to be created by people, and it just takes time. And so you can't put all these things together to see it all together. But at that, right before you install it, it all comes together, and these pieces emerge out of the different rooms, and they just come together in the middle, and you get that first, wow, look at that, how that all came together.
So you do stage it in your studio at some point.
Yeah, we have to set everything up beforehand.
You do have a full thing. I mean, to me, it's like impossible to imagine setting up some of these windows and then taking them apart. Like some of the really high volume ones. It's like the idea of doing it more than once is just beyond me.
It's a lot of work. It really is. And it takes a lot of people to do it. You know, you're working at late hours. You're working when the store is closed to put it together. And
where do you do that staging? Do you have like a set of, you know, fake windows essentially in the studio that like, okay, this is for a space this size and this is for one this size? Or
yeah, we set it all up in our studio, and depending on the store, you know, some of the stores have different features. They'll have frames around the windows, or sometimes it's just open glass, and we will set it up and try as much as we can to make it the right height so that it simulates your viewing point from standing on the sidewalk, so that you know, you could tell if kids are going to be able to see it. And we try to put them in order, because sometimes there's a composition, there's a color scheme that if you stand back from all six windows, you want to be able to see how they read. You don't want all the blue ones next to each other or all the night scenes next to each other. You have to put them in a way that makes the whole thing work.
So you do the staging to get all those details and make those final decisions.
That helps.
And so at that point, you know what the thing's going to look like.
There's still that when you put it in the store, there are often pieces that have never been put in. As much as we hate to do it, there are sometimes just limitations on time that, you know, you don't get all the pieces together. So
can you give me an example of what kind of thing might happen?
Well,
like what's something that's really hard to get into a store?
Sometimes things don't, they almost always fit.
Yeah.
There have been cases where we've had to cut things down to fit it around a cosmetic case or something like that. But the other thing that happens is when you get to the store, you've got lighting. We do preliminary lighting in our studio, so we understand how it's going to look, but the stores have lighting systems and lighting designers. We either have lighting designer on our team that gets involved, or the store will have a lighting person. And so when the lights go on, that's when the features can really be seen in their full.
It's like, you're lighting a theater set in a lot for the bigger ones. And so that can change so much about the way something looks, depending on what you end up with.
Yeah. You know, you could do a crummy lighting job and make the windows look less amazing, but a good lighting person can really transform what you see.
Do you your own lighting person that you bring to the store, or do they have
It varies. Sometimes we do the lights, too.
Okay. I mean, the ones who've been doing this for a while, again, the Macy's, the Bergdorf's, the, like, Lord and Taylor, or again, RIP, but yeah, they know what they're doing.
A lot of the stores have lighting people.
Yeah.
Because they're doing window displays year-round, so they have people there that will do those window displays.
I mean, how often do stores still have their own pros that do their displays?
All the stores we work with have teams.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all involved to some degree or another, some more than others.
So what role do they play?
The stores have some incredible people working in them, and each store has its own style too, remember, and their own kind of stamp that they put on it. So a lot of times we are there up until a day or two before the windows open, and then a lot of times we hand it over to the store and they'll put their own finishing touches on it.
So you eventually have to hand over your creation to someone else then to take care of it and possibly even do like the finishing touch.
Yeah, you'll be surprised sometimes by what gets done.
Like what? Like what kind of thing will they add?
Details. Back in the old days of the actual Christmas trees and, you know, reindeer and things like that, we would walk away from a window display and then come back and see that, you know, there's a whole next level of Christmasification that gets done to these things, you know, little berries and bells and you know how Christmas is. You're basically filling your environment with stuff is the way I see it. Like, what are you doing when you're putting Christmas decor in your house? You're putting stuff. You're putting little bits of light is important. Everyone likes the glow of a Christmas tree and the nice, magical, warm light that those give off.
Yeah.
And greenery is important. So a lot of times you're adding garlands and decor around, you know, banisters of staircases and all that traditional stuff, wreaths on doors. You could put a wreath on anything. Put a wreath on a taxi cab. Put a wreath on, you know, a guy's t-shirt.
So there's always extra Christmas that can't be added.
You can always go higher.
You can always go a little further.
You can put some cute scenes in there. Put, you know, a cup of tea next to somebody, or put a Santa hat on somebody at a party, or, you know, there's just endless opportunities.
You might hand off this scene that you painstakingly put together and someone will say, that's a lot of Christmas, but it could be a little bit more. And that's like, that's the impulse, is to do that more maximum Christmasifying thing.
It's satisfying to look at an environment that's crowded with all this stuff and light and little bits of decor.
What's the best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day in everyday situations. But if that's not on the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. I've used apps in the past to learn new languages, but when I came across Babbel, I wondered if it could help me refresh my knowledge of a language I once spoke well, but was now a little bit or quite a lot rusty. I have to say, I was impressed. The advanced lessons were really useful, tips and idioms that can help with in-depth conversations on topics that I can actually imagine chatting about. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations, and the tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. What's more, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for working listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for working listeners, at babbel.com/working. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/working, spelled BABBEL.com/working. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Oftentimes in Christmas windows, there'll be people or mannequins and they're wearing like a costume, or sometimes it's actually just clothes that are on sale as well. How does the costuming work? How is that
part of it? So most of the Christmas windows that you see in New York, going back, I would say 4 or 5 years previous to now, did not have many mannequins in them. They were mostly all about Christmas. They were about, you know, the scene would be a theme that had nothing to do with fashion. There are some stores that always have that, mannequins, and that are about the fashion. Bergdorf is one of them. They always have mannequins. But all of the characters in a scene would have to be dressed. And a lot of work goes into that. Most of the people that do the work in this feel are legitimate costume designers. We have some incredible people that have been working with the company for decades,
yeah,
30 years, maybe more, working on costumes, and some incredibly talented people that create these,
yeah,
costumes from scratch. And they have a lot of fun. These people love this job. It's exciting. You know, you're just pushing the glitter and the, you know, shiny and the glamour and,
yeah,
the elegance just through the roof with these things. And that's exciting to look at and see.
What is an especially technically difficult display that you've had to do?
We have an incredible mechanical department at Spaeth Design. So the windows that we do typically have motion or machines or some sort of mechanism in them. So the mechanisms that we've done over the years are just incredible. We've got some fantastic people. David Spaeth, who owns the company, is an engineer and has kind of brought that interest to the business and has really pushed to incorporate machines in the windows. So there have been some really interesting movements and things. There was a roller coaster that was done a few years ago,
yeah,
that had a working Santa and reindeer that would move around the window.
Oh, cool.
You know, over and over and over again. It was fantastic.
As a designer, is your first impulse to think of sort of a set, or are you also going into it thinking, how can I get a sort of mechanical motion aspect into here?
I'm a tough customer. I want it to look amazing as much as anybody. So
yeah,
I'm picky about what I like.
Yeah.
A lot of things I just really love, and a lot of things I'm not afraid to not like it. But, you know, at the end of the day, there are moments in the process. A lot of times we're there really late at,
yeah,
the studio, and, you know, you've been working 14, 16-hour days for a month and a half, and you're kind of out of it, and you're kind of in this la-la state, you know, and you're going home at 2 in the morning sometimes, and you're there finishing the windows with other people, and you're there, you've eaten pizza, you've eaten Indian food, you've eaten two dinners, and you're just done, but you're ready to go home, and you turn out the lights, and you notice, wow, look at the lights are still on that display back there. Let's go take a look at that thing. And you walk back there with one of your colleagues, and you're looking at this thing in the dark, and it's quiet, and, you know, it's 2 a.m., and you know that you've done something great when you just stand there quiet and you're just gazing at this thing that you made and just kind of smiling, going, wow,
yeah,
look at that thing. Incredible.
Like the night before opening night.
Yeah, it's a great feeling.
When you disassemble these windows, what happens to the stuff?
Oh my gosh. Should I say this?
Yeah, no, tell me.
Oh my God. There are a lot of times where it literally is a garbage truck sitting out at 3 a.m. on Fifth Avenue, and it's going right into the garbage truck, which is sad. but also satisfying.
It's at least it means it's all done.
It's job security, I guess, because you're always creating new. It's very wasteful too. I have a colleague who I've worked with for, 15 years, and we were talking about it recently, and he's like, this working in this business, I have this thing, when I'm driving down a country road and I see a barn or a warehouse, I think, God, would all the stuff I've made, like all the garbage I've created, fit in that? Would it fill that barn? It's depressing. It's depressing. On the bright side, there is a wonderful man named Mark Kloss is his name. He's a fantastic guy. He's got this Christmas museum almost. In Medina, Ohio, called Casa Noel. It's fantastic what he's done. He's taken a lot of the displays that we've created. Before we even knew him, he was collecting displays from department store warehouses that were, the contents of this warehouse will be auctioned off, and abandoned materials and stuff like that. He found, I don't know how, but he found a lot of old displays that we had created, and he figured out who made them, and he called us up, and we got to know Mark, and he's assembled this fantastic museum of Christmas displays in Ohio. I guess mostly from New York. I haven't actually been there to see it, but the pictures are, most of it seems like it's from New York. And he lets people there see the displays, which is really fantastic.
So someone's keeping all this design alive.
It's great to see. You hate to see these things go into the garbage truck. It's sad. The truth is that there's just no way to store it all.
Yeah. Thanks for chatting about this. This has been a lot of fun, man.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. That's it for this episode of Working. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. And otherwise, you can send us an email at working@slate.com. I'm your host, Jordan Weissman. Working is produced by Jessamyn Molly. And as always, a special thank you to Justin D. Wright for the ad music. Join us again on Sunday for a regularly scheduled episode where we'll be continuing our series about the Museum of Modern Art.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.